The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Rory Best, thank you very much for meeting with us today. You're in a protective boot at the moment, so how bad does that mean your injury is?
I think that the boot makes it look a lot worse than it is. I think given the nature of the injury and how it happened, the scans on Monday probably were as good as they could be. There's no structural damage. It's just a few of the ligaments have been wrenched a little bit and stretched, and a bit of it now is wait and see. You know, come out of the boot towards the end of this week and start to weight bear, and it'll be around how quickly you can get the swelling out of it, how quickly you can get movement on it, and how quickly you can get sort of pain-free walking. So I think it's, well, I hope it's very realistic that I can play again for Ulster before the end of the season.
Because you still have a lot to play for in the Pro 14. You're well placed to reach the semi-finals of the Pro 14. After the disappointment of what happened on Saturday in the Aviva, how important now will the finish to the Pro 14 be to you?
Yeah, it's really important to get to turn the page now. You know, we have a short turnaround of 6 days to go away to Glasgow, who are obviously flying high in the other conference. So we know now that it's in our hands. If we win our remaining 3 games, we get a home quarter final in the Pro 14, which is massive. You know, I think home games are really, really big. Obviously, with the way Leinster have been in our conference, the home semi-final was secured a couple of weeks ago. So we got to make sure that we make sure it stays in our hands, because you don't want to be coming down to the last game or the second last game and relying on other teams to do you a favour.
How quickly do you manage to move on from the disappointment of what happened last Saturday?
It's a tough one, because I think to improve as a team and as an individual, you got to let disappointment soak in. You got to understand it, and you got to learn from it. But then to be better, you've got to, as quickly as you can, process that and go, right, well, what can I do to be better next week? And that's what Dan give us Monday off. So we've had Sunday, Monday to really reflect, talk a bit about it. Some of the boys will come in and have watched the video. Some boys will have watched the game again at home. So we'll be in on Tuesday, and we'll take a really good look at how we can improve, because, look, ultimately, not just for the remaining 3 games of this season, but I think we're really happy with the performance in terms of the intensity that we brought, but ultimately we fell short. So there has to be something that we need to do better, and we have to keep trying to do better. And we can't just do what Ulster teams have done in the past and just go, right, well, you know, we learned from this experience, and by, you know, by almost it'll happen by just getting more experience that you'll improve. It doesn't happen like that, you know, because all that happens is you stand still and other teams go past you. So we've got to find a way to be better, because we need to be better to beat the like of Leinster. And if you want to lift the trophy, ultimately at some point you're going to have to beat Leinster.
You're talking like a man who'll be playing for Ulster again next year. There's been a lot of speculation as what would happen when you finish your Irish career. But if you're thinking like that, and if you've had that disappointment of being playing so well and many people believing you deserve to beat Leinster last Saturday, would that sort of prompt you, persuade you to have another go next season for the European Cup?
You know, it's a funny one, because in January we played the 2 big games for Ulster in the European, and we knew we needed to win both of those to qualify, and then very quickly you're swept off to the Six Nations. But you think you've a load of time, and all of a sudden now we're into April, and you know, probably need to be making a decision. But you come back from the Six Nations, we were into a quarter final, so we didn't want any other distractions. So look, I haven't really spoken to Dan and Bryn much about it. There's some days go by, and like Saturday before the game and the build up to it, and even afterwards for different reasons, you know, you want to play on. There's other days you're driving into training at sort of 6:30 in the morning, and you're there going, you know, I just want to go back to a normal life. Like, for example, today when you hear the announcement that Jack McGrath's coming up, that's another reason why you'd want to play on. So, look, I haven't definitely decided. You know, we'll sit down and the three of us will talk it through and see where everyone's head's at. And I'll talk then to my wife and my mum and dad, and just sort of see, and I'll seek counsel from Simon as well, and just sort of see what I feel. Obviously the big goal for me for the last year and a half has always been the World Cup. That's what the big focus is on. I didn't think that I would enjoy playing for Ulster as much as I have this season, you know, with Dan, the injection of Dan coming in. It's been really enjoyable place to be. So that's to say, it's sort of depending on, it's not even from one day to the next, sometimes from 1 hour to the next is I go, I want to play on, or I don't want to go on, or, you know, so I'll give it a lot of thought now over the next 2 weeks, and probably this ankle injury has given me a little bit of breathing space with no games to do that.
How frustrating was it, though, to be in such a big game last Saturday, to be fired up for it, to have started so well, and then to be injured so early and have to leave the fray?
Yeah, look, I think that ultimately when you're dealing with club rugby, you want to play on those occasions. Like, those are the reasons that you play, those are the reasons that you train, and you don't often get it in your home province. And to go down to the Aviva, a place that I love playing in, a place that's a cracking atmosphere, to basically have, what, 6 or 7 minutes to be injured, to hobble around for maybe another 10, and then to eventually exit stage left, is not the way that I want to compete. I want to try to be the best that I can be. I want to be involved in a team that want to be the best. And look, unfortunately, it wasn't to be. It was kind of a situation where I probably could have tried to put more strapping on it and play on, but I felt it was a passenger, and ultimately a sort of, between myself and the medics, very quickly we took the decision that I knew 14 and a half men playing against Leinster's 15, it's difficult enough to beat them with 15 without carrying somebody, and Rob Herring is a cracking player, and look, ultimately, unfortunately, as much as I would have liked to try to carry on, the team kind of has to come first.
How difficult is it to be a spectator in a situation like that when the game is turning into such an absolutely brilliant spectacle, to be on a knife edge, to be the captain sitting on the sideline? What sort of emotions go through your head?
There's all sorts of emotions, you know, like you say, with the type of game that it is, they're the games you want to play in. There's also, you know, you never know, you don't know the extent of the injury. Is this going to be your last appearance for Ulster if you don't continue after the World Cup? Potentially you might never play a European Cup game for Ulster. Is this how you want to be remembered, limping off after 16 minutes? You know, so all of those all sort of play in your mind, and around all of that, you're watching a game that you want to be playing in, and you're looking at a team that are winning, they're not winning, they're winning again, it's on a knife edge, and ultimately you have to watch as Leinster deliver that killer blow at the end through Ross Byrne's boot, and they didn't let us get the ball back again really after that. You know, to go, I don't know, was it 40 something phases, they really showed what a championship team they are in terms of the way they finally, on about 75 minutes, had us by the neck and they didn't let us go.
It also struck me after the game, and it's one thing that I suppose is very noticeable about rugby, is that teams talk to each other in a way that you don't necessarily see in other sports. And you seem to be engaged in so many chats with Leinster players afterwards. How difficult is that? Or is that actually a good thing for sort of getting a release on your emotions?
I think it's a great thing about rugby in general, you know, that sort of thing happens. Obviously, when you have two provincial teams playing against each other, and I think this Irish squad, more than any that I've known, are a very, very collective bunch. You know, we want to spend time with each other, we like each other, we respect each other, and we want each other to be successful, as long as it's not at the expense of the team you play for. And look, those boys were over and they were checking on how I was, and look, the Irish boys, but also guys like Scott Fardy, who I don't even know if I have played against him in Leinster colours, but I've played against him for Australia, you know, he was straight over as well, and I think it's a really great thing. Obviously the Leinster boys were, I thought they were really, really gracious in victory.
Maybe that's because they realised they've been very lucky.
And like, I think they realised the magnitude of the game and how much we'd invested in it, and you know, it was, but I think that sort of happens anyway. But look, they're a great bunch of guys as well, and it's a pity that they won, because I would have liked us to win.
And when you also have that injury, is there part of you also thinking about yourself rather than the team, rather wondering, God, how bad is this? Could this affect my World Cup chances? I mean, in a way, you see what happened to poor Dan Levy, and it was almost clear immediately that his World Cup was going to be over. What about yourself? Did you have fears that the injury could be worse than it's turned out to be?
I think you're always, the thing about it is, the closer you get to the World Cup, the more within touching distance comes. You know that there's three regular games left for Ulster, potentially another three games in playoffs, you know, six more games, and then you're into a pre-season, and then there's four warm-ups, and you do all these calculations in your head, and you know it is so close. But the flip side of that is, the closer you get to the World Cup, the less severe the injury has to be to rule you out of it. You know, a year ago, it needs to be a horrific injury to take, prevent you from going to the World Cup. Whereas now, it just needs to be a reasonably severe injury to keep you out. You know, like Dan Levy is, like his was just a shocking injury at any time of the year. And, you know, it's really sad for the way he's fought back to come to be in a position to play. And he's such a quality player. But those things do go through your mind. Obviously, at this, I felt it wasn't that bad that it would keep me out for potentially 3-4 months. But at the same time, you're thinking about the Ulster season and you're going, like, that window to finish this season playing for Ulster narrows very quickly, and like, you just don't know. And until you get the scan results, you're very much in the dark.
World Cup year, and I suppose everybody's very excited by that. But then there's also been the disappointment of a Six Nations that, certainly as far as the fans feel, didn't go as had been expected. How have you coped with sort of going from the highs of last year, a fantastic year with the Grand Slam, beating New Zealand, to the disappointments of the Six Nations this year and now with Ulster? How do you deal with those ups and downs?
Look, when you get enough experience, you realise they're kind of part and parcel, as frustrating as they are. Look, we look at the Six Nations and we're incredibly disappointed with the way, probably the consistency that we showed. You know, I thought we were very good against France, and then we were okay in bits against Scotland. We were okay in bits against Italy, and then we really weren't great in the two ends of the start and finish of the England and Wales games. So we'll have to take a look at that and go, well, how can we better? The positive to take from it, a couple of positives, is we've won 23 of the last 26 internationals, which I think any Ireland team down the years would have probably taken your hand off for that. And the second one being that it's happened now and it didn't happen in a World Cup. So look, knowing our coaching staff and the playing group we have, you know, we'll take a look back and we'll go, right, well, look, we need to do whatever we can to make sure this doesn't happen again, and we'll move forward with it. Because in 2007, for example, we had a really good Six Nations. We should have won the championship, and we went in high flying thinking this will all just happen for us, and we bombed out at the World Cup. So hopefully now we've had our little blip and we've went, well, okay, it's not just a case of turning up and we win by right. You know, we need to look back at how we prepared and how we do that better. So look, we need to make sure that we learn from this and that we get better.
Something that's relevant to you as the captain and decision maker on the pitch, it's been very noticeable in a lot of games, not just involving Ireland, but a lot of the games in the Champions Cup quarterfinals. The amount of times now that teams opt not to kick for goal, but to go for the corner, to go for a try off the lineout, and don't succeed. It seems that the actual ratios of success are actually dropping, that defences are often winning out. So how cognizant are you of that now in games? How much of a factor is that likely to be in the World Cup about taking your points whenever they are available to you, or a need perhaps to feel that you have to get a try because of the way the momentum is going in a match?
I think you've got to be aware very much of the momentum of a game. You know, we'll go in and like Johnny and I and Pete will discuss a little bit about, you know, a bit about how we want to approach the game in terms of we want to attack and we want to go after teams. And look, we'll have strategies around that, but you also got to be aware that sometimes points, you know, 3 points can be invaluable, and you try to weigh that against the pressure, because you know what it's like yourself when you're defending and a team kicks 3 points, you kind of breathe a sigh of relief and go, right, well, we can now get back into their half again. Whereas when the ball goes into the corner, yes, you get excited about the challenge of having to defend that, but there's also that sort of reality that if they score, that's 7 points, and 7 points, depending on the scoreboard, can be enormous. So it's just about getting that balance, and a lot of it is just about feel. You know, like sometimes the way a game goes, all your plans and strategies go out the window.
But the thing about momentum is if you fail to get that score, sometimes it can give an enormous lift to the defending team.
It can do, and that's where you've got to be able to make sure that your next moment, so if a team turns you over and gets a penalty and kicks it, that you go, that everyone, that there's awareness in the team. And that's where it's great, you know, that we have someone like Pete in the line-out, that he's aware that if we get that ball back again from steal their line-out, all of a sudden the momentum swings back into our favour and we can keep that sustained pressure on, and versus them winning the ball, maybe us conceding another penalty, and 2 penalties later you're in your own half, and that's a massive momentum swing. So it's about your key players being aware at all times about momentum isn't just about not scoring the try. Sometimes it's about, okay, we didn't score the try, but is the next moment of the game us getting back into their half again? Because eventually teams will crack and they'll give up something, and they might give up a penalty that's a lot more kickable than the one you went to the corner. So it's that awareness about keeping that all together, and yes, the captain makes that ultimate decision. But, and that's where Ireland are good, in that we have a spine of leaders through the team. So no matter what happens, whether they win the ball and go wide, it goes over to somebody like Earlsey. If they try to maul it, you know, we have like myself and Pete and Connor near it. You know, if there's a tactical decision needs to be done, Johnny's in the thick of that. So it's really important that the momentum and the awareness of the game management is taken into account by all of your leaders.
How confident are you that you'll be better in the World Cup than you were in the Six Nations?
Yeah, look, I think that we're an incredibly confident group of players. Look, I think our confidence did take a bit of a rattle during the Six Nations by the way England started, and it kind of makes you to look at yourself a little bit. And I think the good thing with this squad is that we're constantly trying to be better. I think when you look at the way that, you know, Munster have been at the top of their game for the last couple of years, you know, and the spine of that team really revolves around like CJ, Pete, Connor, Earlsey, you know, and they're the sort of spine of the Ireland team. And the same with Leinster, you know, with guys, the emergence of James Ryan, Sean O'Brien, Johnny Sexton, Rob Kearney, you know, that sort of spine, like that's what you need to build teams on. And when you have that spine, it gives you something to build on. And look, we're going to have to go away and be better and know that we weren't good enough. We're going to have to be big enough to take that in the chin and not just go, oh, it'll be fine the next time we meet up. It will be, as long as we're prepared to be open and honest to say, listen, we got X, Y, and Z wrong in our preparation. You know, even myself, you know, ultimately the closing of the roof was probably my decision. And I think
not. Sorry, I think everyone thinks that was Joe Schmidt's decision.
Well, like, Joe's very good at sort of, look, we had a talk about it, and ultimately I said, look, the last time we closed the roof and we turned up and the pitch was soaking wet, you know, so why go down that route again? And we talked about it, and I think in the end we said, look, we feel that we can play under any conditions. We showed at the start of the French game after the snow that we could still handle the ball in difficult conditions. So we said, look, let's not let it be roof closed, pitch watered, you know, let's just go, well, no matter what the weather conditions are, we'll back our skills. And that would have been fine had we not have went 7-0 down after sort of 30 seconds. And the problem is, in that rain, 7 points is almost, especially when they went to 10, that's almost like 20 points. It's very, very hard to claw that back. And look, hindsight will say we maybe made the wrong decision there, but we should have been better in the way we started. You know, if we could have went 10 points up with the rain, with the pressure on them, it's a totally different game. And look, you got to live by those mistakes and sort of go take a bit of responsibility for them.
Couple of things I want to ask you before we finish, and I will talk to you about hearing and Specsavers, which is the reason why you're here. But I want to go back to Ulster, because I'm fascinated by one of the things that over the weekend, the amount of Dublin-born Leinster players in the Ulster team who gave their all, everything for Ulster. How gratifying is that, given that there must have been a degree of perhaps a little bit of suspicion and angst in Ulster rugby about this influx of players, that they all gave everything for you and are going to be participants in the building of a spine for the future Ulster teams?
I think the thing that we've probably got wrong in the past is that we signed players potentially based solely on their ability, and sometimes we got that ability wrong as well. You know, we signed players that weren't really good enough, whereas this time we've signed players that are of quality and they are good people. You know, like Jordy Murphy, you know, was nearly in tears in the changing room afterwards, you know, and that's because he's put his heart and soul into Ulster this season, having put his heart and soul into Leinster for how many seasons before that. And you know, when you get people of that sort of personality, you know, they'll bed in wherever they are, and right from the word go, Jordy's fitted in and he's tried to push the standards. The same with Marty. And I think the big thing for us is, look, ultimately, because we're provincial in Ireland, and we're not just clubs, you know, we're provincial, it is important that we get our act together and that we start to produce our own Ulster-born players. But I think until that point comes, if you can supplement them with quality players, preferably from other provinces, because I think it is important that they know what it takes to play within Ireland. And the Ireland provincial system is different to any other club system. So they buy into that. But we've got to make sure we don't become reliant on it, which there is a bit of a fear. You know, we have a couple of good young Ulster players, but we've got to make sure that we Leinster for conveyor belt, and that's ultimately where you want to get to. But we've signed the right people. Even like Billy Burns now, he didn't come through the Irish system, but what he's given to this team, because he's a good guy and he wants to win, he wants to succeed, and people like him and want to help him on his journey as well.
But there is a significance, isn't there? I mean, even for Ulster fans, because it wouldn't have been traditionally the thing to have too many players coming from south of the border to play for Ulster. It is, I suppose, even on a cross-community basis, it's a good thing to see, isn't it?
It's massive. You know, for years we've been coming across the border to play for Ireland, and you know, we haven't batted an eyelid about it. That is just what we do. And you know, there's been a lot of movement in years from Munster to Leinster to Connacht to, and it's great now that they see the way we see it in a rugby context, is that this is an all Ireland, and that wherever you go, to wherever your best opportunity is, not to where you maybe think you're going to feel more comfortable because you have a perception of somewhere. And you know, I think like definitely Geordie with that move up, being as he turned out when he signed for us, he was maybe a little bit in the periphery of Leinster, but he ended up being one of their key players in that, lifting that double last year. And for him to be coming up, and now Jack, Marty Moore went a slightly different route about it, but look, I think it is ultimately about getting the best players, and I think it's really encouraging that they now want to come up to us, and especially obviously Geordie, kind of, I'm sure he's spoken to Jack or Jack's spoken to him, and the fact that he's obviously has a good word to say about it, that has sort of encouraged Jack to come up, I think is really encouraging for Ulster rugby.
Now, one final thing, you're here not only with the protective boot on your foot, but you're wearing a Specsavers shirt, an audiologist shirt. Do you find it difficult at times in the din that you get in somewhere like the Aviva, be it for the match last weekend or for international, to actually hear what's going on? Is that why for a lot of the time the player calling the line out has to literally go and speak into the hooker's ear, not just so they won't be overheard, but just so that they will be heard?
Well, I think when you get in big stadiums that are really, really loud, you do. I think everyone struggles to hear. I think the reason that I sort of became the ambassador for the Don't Suffer in Silence campaign with Specsavers in the audiology department is because sometimes when I'm in a room, you know, I don't get issues when I'm in 80,000 or 50,000, but when you're in a room and there's a lot of background noise, I sort of thought that I was struggling to hear a little bit, and I didn't want this to become an issue. I didn't want it to start to become an issue in my rugby, so I thought I want to get this checked out. And you know, whenever they were telling us that, you know, that they, there's 50% or almost 50% of Irish males are worried about losing their hearing, but actually only 25%, whenever something, maybe if they mishear something or they start to hear or feel something's not right, that they go and get it checked out. You know, like they're worrying figures. So I got mine checked and they turned out to be good, but that'll be something now that I'll try to get done regularly. They recommend when you're over 55 you get it done every 2 years, but I think that if anyone has any issue at all, they should definitely go, and I think it's something that you should be getting done regularly. I'm 36 and playing rugby professionally, but it is something that it gives me a lot of peace of mind to get it done. And I know my dad now is booked in to get it done as well, through the guys here, because it is a really, really important part, you know, to be able to hear. You know, sometimes they say that people maybe don't want to hear, but I think it is important you have the option to at least hear.
And for the front row forward, aesthetically, your ears don't seem to be in too bad a shape, are they?
No, they're not too bad. Now, there's definitely a lot worse around, and hopefully they stay that way.
Rory Best, thank you very much for taking the time to join us today.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.